Hello, and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. It's Monday, October 17th, and on today's show, a conversation with David Sedaris, who's coming to town for a one-man show on October 21st. He's going to be at the Tivoli Theater in downtown Chattanooga. He's a New York Times best-selling author and comedian. The audio version of his essay collection, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls, was nominated for a Grammy. You may have heard David Sedaris on NPR or This American Life. Actually, he got his first break on NPR reading a personal essay called The Santaland Diaries. That essay was about his experiences working as Crumpet the Elf in a department store one Christmas.
22,000 people came to see Santa today, and not all of them were well-behaved. Today I witnessed fistfights and vomiting in magnificent tantrums. The back hallway was jammed with people. There was a line for Santa and a line for the women's bathroom. And one woman, after asking me 1,000 questions already, asked, "Which is the line for the women's bathroom?" And I shouted that I thought it was the line with all the women in it. She said, "I'm going to have you fired." I had 2 people say that to me today. "I'm going to have you fired." Go ahead, be my guest. I'm wearing a green velvet costume. It doesn't get any worse than this. Who do these people think they are? I'm going to have you fired. And I want to lean over and say, I'm going to have you killed.
How are you?
Okay.
Great to talk to you. So you've
Well, thank you for taking the time to do it.
We are all really big fans here, and I know you've been to Chattanooga before once. Now you're coming back. I mean, what were your impressions of Chattanooga the last time you were here?
You know, last time I was there, it was a Saturday, and so Saturday means weddings and hotels, which I just, But I went to the YMCA, and it was fantastic.
Really? What did you like about the Y?
Wonderful. It was. I went swimming there, and it was just the swimming room was really cheerful, and people were very friendly, and there weren't too many chemicals in the water. You know, because you go to the YMCA and you go into the pool, and you get out, and you're missing a layer of skin. You know, there's so much chlorine in the pool. It was just cheerful there.
David Sedaris liked the Chattanooga YMCA so much. He talked about it on stage at the Tivoli the last time he was here. I don't know exactly what he's going to talk about this time, but I do know what he's been up to lately. He and his partner Hugh have moved to England, and over in the United Kingdom, David Sedaris has found a new kind of fame, not just as a writer, but as the local litter collector. I wondered if that had anything to do with his humble origins before he was a big famous author. Early on in your writing career, when you were first on public radio and being interviewed by Terry Gross, your day job was cleaning houses. And now that you're living in the United Kingdom, you're going out and picking up trash alongside of the road, not because it's your job or anything, just because you want to do it. What is up with you and cleaning? Is this like a compulsion? Does this somehow help your writing?
It doesn't have anything to do with writing. It might be something of a compulsion, but, you know, the train station here. I take the train to London quite often. And I don't know what it is, but English people will go to a parking lot and they'll say, "Oh, guess I better clean out my car." And then all the bottles and cans and just any bits of paper, they just leave in the parking lot and then they just drive away. So I've been tackling the train station this week. And I think so far I've filled 12 hefty bags of garbage.
I mean, what is people's reactions when they see you out there cleaning? Do they ever come up and talk to you?
Well, a woman saw me today, and then she came and talked to me, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm cleaning up all this garbage." And she said, "Are you a volunteer?" And I said, "I guess you could say that. I mean, nobody's paying me." And then she came back a few minutes later and said, are you David Sedaris? Because I'm on the BBC, I have a show on the BBC here on the radio. and they mispronounced my name. So they call me David Sedaris on the radio. So, I did an essay on the radio about cleaning up.
Pick up litter, and people assume that it's your punishment, part of your court-mandated community service. Is it him who's been breaking into tool sheds, they wonder? Him who's been stealing batteries from parked cars? At first, I worried what passers-by might think, but then my truer nature kicked in, and I became obsessed. When that happened, there was no room for anyone else, except occasionally for Hugh, who does his part but won't pull the car over to collect every plastic bag he comes across. He can talk about litter, but when the topic shifts to the price of heating oil or the correct way to lay a paving stone, he can shift with it. For me, though, there is no other topic. Here's who I've turned into since we moved to West Sussex. On a good day, a dry one, I don't have any mud on my clothes, just the usual dirt from crawling under fences. This to chase down empty bottles of Lucozade, an energy drink that gives its consumers the power to throw more bottles further. One afternoon, while driving back from the beach, she pointed out a McDonald's bag vomiting its contents onto the pavement. I say that any company whose products are found on the ground automatically has to go out of business, he said. This is how we talk nowadays, as if our pronouncements hold actual weight and can be implemented at our discretion, like we're kings or warlocks. Once I found a stroller with the seat burned out. This as if the child had spontaneously combusted.
What is it like living in the UK compared to, you know, growing up in here in the South, in North Carolina? I mean, imagine this, the two societies, the two places are at least somewhat similar.
Well, a lot of people think that when they come here, or they move here, because they think, oh, you know, we speak the same language. But, like, I'm in the, where I'm talking to you right now from West Sussex. You know, I live in a hamlet outside of a village. And, like, the village is a slightly larger village where I go and go to the grocery store. I don't know, maybe, like, 2,000 people live in the larger village. And in a community that size, you would expect that everybody would say hello when you walk down the street. And no, it's not the case at all.
Hmm.
It wasn't like that when we lived in Normandy either. I mean, in Normandy, you'd pass somebody in the front yard and you would say hello, and they would just kind of fold their arms and turn away. If they were introduced to you by a third party, then that was different. But another thing, like in France, too, is that, okay, let's say that they're introduced by a third party. Then you go on, like, two or three friendship dates, and then you're just married to them. And they would complain, French people would complain all the time, you Americans, you know, you say, let's get together for lunch, and you don't mean it. And I would say, yeah, isn't that beautiful? It's fantastic. I mean, if you have to be someone's friend for life, you know, because how do you know you're not going to outgrow somebody? It's just a real, like, making friends in France, I just realized after a while, like, I'm not willing to make that kind of commitment.
And you've also, in the past, talked about how it can be difficult for you just to make friends at all because you stay on such a regimented schedule that, you know, somebody's calling going, oh, no, my spouse just said they want a divorce. And you're like, it's 6 o'clock. Got to write. Sorry, can't talk.
Well, that's my friend here. He is a local politician, and we go out and pick up rubbish together. And afterwards, we go out, and we'll go to a pub, and we talk about rubbish. It is all either one of us care about, and it's a great friendship.
I mean,
we get our grabbers, and we head out and we pick up. He's on one side of the road, I'm on the other. And, you know, if it's a narrow road, we can kind of talk while we're doing it. But all we really talk about is what we found.
Do you like compare, see who got the weirdest finding that day or something?
Well, I wish that I could say that I find interesting things. But it's the same garbage over and over again, you know.
Well, speaking of finding things, your new book that's coming out next year is called Theft by Finding. What is that title? What does that mean? How did you come up with it?
Well, I've been keeping a diary since 1977. And so it's a collection of diary entries from 1977 until now. And but I found a 5-pound note a 5-pound bill on the street, I don't know, a couple of years ago. And I mentioned it to an English friend, and she said, well, did you turn it in? And I said, no. She said, well, that's theft by finding. That if you find something and you don't bother to see if it's been lost or stolen, it's theft by finding. So I thought that would be a good title for the book, because so many of the diary entries are just things that people have told me over the years.
But if you're publishing diary entries, I mean, how much editing do you do? Are we going to really see the raw David Sedaris diaries when this comes out?
Well, my problem is I've spent the past year and a half reading my diaries. And, man, it is not rewarding to read your diary from when you were 21 years old. That is awful to have to do that. And I think my last book was like 60,000 words. And this one, because of course it's not all of my diary, it's just, you know, I might pick 50 brief entries one year and, I don't know, 200 brief entries the next. And anyway, I think my last book was 60,000 words. And this is 600,000. So really what we're going to be doing between now and February is just massively cutting it. But I think if it's a diary, and I've been, you know, it's rare for me to miss a day, right? So there are any number of edits this book could have. So you could edit this book to make me just look like a completely petty and selfish person. You could edit to make me look like a generous person. You could edit it to make me look like a funny person. But the sad thing is you could not edit it to make me look like a wise person. There's not one bit of wisdom in this whole book, I realize. But it's a lot of things that I overhear, or, you know, a lot of jokes. I've written down every joke that anyone's ever told me. And, you know, I was signing books one night in England, and I met a man and wife, and they both lost their right arm in a car accident. I mean, together. He was driving, they had an accident, and both of them lost their right arm. Things like that, that I think, wow, that's pretty great.
I mean, what do you do with that kind of an anecdote? How do you spin that into a story?
Well, you know, sometimes you can, but sometimes it's just something in my diary. And so I thought, well, this is a perfect occasion because it's a collection of diary entries.
Yeah.
So I don't have to turn it. It doesn't have to be anything more than it is.
If you're just joining in, we're speaking with David Sedaris. Now, one of the things that he's really well known for is that after he does a performance, like the one he's going to do at the Tivoli, he'll usually sit for hours and hours signing books as fans line up. He'll have a conversation with each one of them, and when he signs your book, it's not going to be something bland and generic like best wishes.
In 2008, I saw you do a lecture in Nashville and was one of the many people standing in line for hours afterwards waiting to get a book signed. And you wrote in it, "Diabetes is for lovers." And then, of course, you had a book later on, "Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls." Why was diabetes so much on your mind back then?
I don't know. I just always liked the word. And then I remember "Virginia is for lovers." I think a lot of things became for lovers. But "Virginia is for lovers" is the very first bumper sticker of its sort, right? And so I just thought "Diabetes is for lovers" would just be funny. I just, it's so stupid.
I thought it was pretty funny, but I know, sometimes I imagine some people are probably puzzled, maybe even a little offended by some of the things that you've written in your books. I mean, do you ever get any kind of like hecklers or pushback or anything because you wrote something in somebody's book and they were just like, "That's horrible. Why would you say that to me?"
A number of times. and what kills me on every occasion is I think they weren't taking my manner into account. Like, I was in Charlotte, and I remember this couple. They came at the very end of the line. It had been a really long signing. They were the last ones in line. I don't want to make myself sound saintly or anything, but I recall them. I remember I was very gracious to them. I did not act in any way like I wanted to go home. I spent as much time with them as I had with anybody. And then I get a letter. They're terribly offended what I wrote in the book. And I remember she had said that it was her husband's birthday. And so I wrote in this book, "You deserve better than this." Okay? And then how dare you insult me or insult my wife? And I said, "You deserve better than me. You deserve better than my book is a gift." I was putting myself down, not you.
You'll be here October 21st. Can you give us any idea about what you're going to be talking about?
You know, I've been so busy working on this book, so busy, that it's kind of a miracle that with everything I had to do, I've written 4 new stories to read on this tour. And I think one of them might be about Carol, who I'm looking out the window for right now. Carol is a fox, and I noticed her about 6 weeks ago in the yard, and because you see them every now and then, but they're timid and they run away. But not Carol. Carol comes every night, and now she eats out of my hand. Every night she comes.
Oh, wow.
And she'll get up like 3 inches from me. I cross the yard, Carol follows at my heels. I'll take a seat on the bench. She'll sit at my feet with her legs crossed. No one has ever seen anything like it. We have people come over for dinner. We eat outside. I say, "Turn around," and there's Carol. But I need an ending. So I said to somebody a couple of days ago, I said, "Would you beat her to death with a golf club?" So I could. But I don't want Carol to die. I have to find a way to end this essay. This is a predicament, you know, I often find myself in. I just have to, and you know, often you create your ending just out of words. You know, you kind of relate your love for Carol to your love for something else, and you just kind of find a way to, you know, to make it out of air, to make the ending out of air. You know, so easier said than done, but that's what I'm hoping on.
Well, it's kind of like the way just, like, I think probably at least half of all NPR stories always end with some variation of "only time will tell." Well, thank you so much for speaking with us. Is there anything else you want to say?
Gosh, no, I can't think of anything. I just, but I really am looking forward. I know that sounds like I say that all the time, but I really am looking forward to going back to Chattanooga and going to that YMCA.
All right. We will look for you there like weird, creepy stalkers.
Great.
Great.
And just one more time, David Sedaris will be here in Chattanooga on October 21st for a reading at the Tivoli Theater. That's it for Around It About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller.
Around and About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.